Three other witches sat in the gloom behind the stage, staring vacantly into the darkness. Granny Weatherwax had picked up a copy of the script, which she peered at from time to time, as if seeking ideas.
"Divers alarums and excursions," she read uncertainly.
"That means lots of terrible happenings," said McGrath. "You always put that in plays."
"Alarums and what?" said Nanny Ogg, who hadn't been listening.
"Excursions," said McGrath patiently.
"Oh," Nanny Ogg brightened a bit. "The seaside would be nice," she said.
"Do shut up, Gaither," said Granny Weatherwax. "They're not for you. They're only for divers, like it says. Probably so they can recover from all them alarums."
"We can't let this happen," said McGrath, quickly and loudly. "If this gets about, witches'll always be old hags with green blusher."
"And meddling in the affairs of kings," said Nanny, "which we never do, as is well known."
"It's not the meddling I object to," said Granny Weatherwax, her chin on her hand. "It's the evil meddling."
"And the unkindness to animals," muttered McGrath. "All that stuff about the eye of dog and ear of toad. No one uses that kind of stuff."
Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg carefully avoided one another's faces.
"Drab," said Nanny Ogg bitterly.
"Witches just aren't like that," said McGrath. "We live in harmony with the great cycles of nature and do no harm to anyone, and it's wicked of them to say we don't. We ought to fill their bones with hot lead."
The other two looked at her with a certain amount of surprised admiration. She blushed, although not greenly, and looked at her knees.
"Goody Wemper did a recipe," she confessed. "It's quite easy. What you do is, you get some lead and you..."
"I don't think that would be appropriate,"
said Granny carefully, after a certain amount of internal struggle.
"It could give people the wrong idea."
"But not for long," said Nanny wistfully.
"No, we can't be having with that sort of thing,"
said Granny, a little more firmly this time.
"We'd never hear the last of it."
"Why don't we just change the words?" said McGrath. "When they come back on stage, we could just put the fluence on them so they forget what they're saying and give them some new words."
"I suppose you're an expert at theatre words," said Granny sarcastically. "They'd have to be the proper sort, otherwise people would suspect."
"Shouldn't be too difficult," said Nanny Ogg dismissively. "I've been studying it. You go tumpty, tumpty, tumpty."
Granny gave this some consideration.
"There's more to it than that, I believe," she said. "Some of those speeches were very good. I couldn't understand hardly any of it."
"There's no trick to it at all," Nanny Ogg insisted. "Anyway, half of them are forgetting their lines as it is. It'll be easy."
"We could put words in their mouths," said McGrath.
Nanny Ogg nodded.
"I dunno about new words," she said, "but we could make them forget these words."
They both looked at Granny Weatherwax. She shrugged.
"I suppose it's worth a try," she conceded.
"Witches as yet unborn will thank us for it," said McGrath ardently.
"Oh, good," said Granny. "At last! What are you three playing at? We've been looking for you everywhere."
The witches turned to see an irate dwarf trying to loom over them.
"Us?" said McGrath. "But we're not in..."
"Oh, yes, you are. Remember, we put you in last week, Act Two, downstage, around the cauldron. You haven't got to say anything. You're symbolising occult forces at work. Just be as wicked as you can. Come on, there's good lads. We've done well so far."
Howell slapped McGrath on the bottom.
"Good complexion you got there, Wilf,"
he said encouragingly.
"But for goodness sake, use a bit more padding. You're still the wrong shape. Fine warts there, Billum, I must say,"
he added, standing back.
You look as nasty a bunch of hags as a body might hope to clap eyes on. Well done. Shame about the wigs. Now to run along. Curtain up in 1 minute. Break a leg.
He gave McGrath another ringing slap on her rump, slightly hurting his hand, and hurried off to shout at someone else. None of the witches dared to speak. McGrath and Nanny Ogg found themselves instinctively turning toward Granny. She sniffed. She looked up. She looked around. She looked at the brightly lit stage behind her. She brought her hands together with a clap that echoed round the castle, and then rubbed them together.
"Useful," she said grimly. "Let's do the show right here."
Nanny squinted sullenly after Howl.
"Break your own leg," she muttered.
Howl stood in the wings and gave the signal for the curtain, and for the thunder. It didn't come.
"Thunder!"
he hissed in a voice heard by half the audience.
"Get on with it!"
A voice from behind the nearest pillar wailed.
"I went and bent the thunder, Howl. It just goes clonk, clonk."
Howl stood silent for a moment, counting. The company watched him, awestruck, but not, unfortunately, thunderstruck. At last, he raised his fists to the open sky and said,
"I wanted a storm! Just a storm! Not even a big storm, any storm! Now, I want to make myself absolutely clear! I've had enough! I want thunder right now!"
A stab of lightning that answered him turned the multi-hued shadows of the castle into blinding white and searing black. It was followed by a roll of thunder, on cue. It was the loudest noise Howl had ever heard. It seemed to start inside his head and work its way outwards. It went on and on, shaking every stone in the castle. Dust rained down. A distant turret broke away with balletic slowness and, tumbling end over end, dropped gently into the hungry depths of the gorge. When it finished, it left a silence that rang like a bell. Howl looked up at the sky. Great black clouds were blowing across the castle, blotting out the stars. The storm was back. It had spent ages learning its craft. It had spent years lurking in distant valleys. It had practiced for hours in front of a glacier. It had studied the great storms of the past. It had honed its art to perfection, and now, tonight, with what it could see was clearly an appreciative audience waiting for it, it was going to take them by, well, tempest. Howl smiled. Perhaps the gods did listen, after all. He wished he'd asked for a really good wind machine as well. He gestured frantically at Tom John.
"Get on with it!"
The boy nodded and launched into his main speech. "And now our domination is complete." Behind him on the stage, the witches bent over the cauldron.
"It's just tin, this one," hissed Nanny. "And it's full of all yuck."
"And the fire is just red paper," whispered McGrath. "It looks so real from up there. It's just red paper. Look, you can poke it."
"Never mind," said Granny. "Just look busy and wait until I say."
As the evil king and the good duke began the exchange that was going to lead to the exciting duel scene, they became uncomfortably aware of activity behind them and occasional chuckles from the audience. After a totally inappropriate burst of laughter, Tom John risked a sideways glance. One of the witches was taking their fire to bits. Another one was trying to clean the cauldron. The third one was sitting with her arms folded, glaring at him.
"The very soul cries out at tyranny," said Wimslow,
and then caught the expression on Tom John's face and followed his gaze. His voice trailed into silence.
"And calls me forth for vengeance,"
prompted Tom John helpfully.
"But
whispered Wimslow, trying to point surreptitiously with his dagger.
"I wouldn't be seen dead with a cauldron like this," said Nanny Ogg,
in a whisper loud enough to carry to the back of the courtyard.
2 days' work with a scourer and a bucket of sand, is this?
And calls me forth for vengeance,
hissed Tom John. Out of the tail of his eye, he saw Howl in the Wings, frozen in an attitude of incoherent rage.
How do they make it flicker?
Said McGrath.
Be quiet, you two. You're upsetting people.
She raised her hat to Wimslow.
Go ahead, young man. Don't mind us.
What?
Said Wimslow.
Aha! It calls you forth for vengeance, does it?
Said Tom John in desperation.
And the heavens cry revenge, too, I expect.
On cue, the storm produced a thunderbolt that blew the top off another tower. The Duke crouched in his seat, his face a panorama of fear. He extended what once had been a finger.
There they are, he breathed. That's them. What are they doing in my play? Who said they could be in my play?
The Duchess, who was less inclined to deal in rhetorical questions, beckoned to the nearest guard. On stage, Tom John was sweating under the load of the script. Wimslow was incoherent. Now Gumridge, who was playing the part of the good Duchess in a wig of flax, had lost the thread as well.
Aha! Thou callest me an evil king, though thou whisperest it so none save I may hear it,
Tom John croaked.
And thou hast summoned the guard, possibly by some secret signal owing naught to artifice of lips or tongue.
A guard came on crabwise, still stumbling from Howell's shove. He stared at Granny Weatherwax.
Howell says, what the hell's going on?
He hissed.
What was that?
Said Tom John.
Did I hear you say, I come, my lady?
Get these people off, he says.
Tom John advanced to the front of the stage.
Thou babblest, man. See how I dodge thou tortoise spear. I said, see how I dodge thy tortoise spear. Thy spear, man. You're holding it in thy bloody hand, for goodness sake.
The guard gave him a desperate, frozen grin. Tom John hesitated. Three other actors around him were staring fixedly at the witches. Looming up in front of him, with all the inevitability of a tax demand, was a sword fight during which, it was beginning to appear, he would have to parry his own wild thrusts and stab himself to death. He turned to the three witches, his mouth open. For the first time in his life, his awesome memory let him down. He could think of nothing to say. Granny Weatherwax stood up. She advanced to the edge of the stage. The audience held its breath. She held up a hand.
Ghosts of the mind, and all device away, I bid the truth to have...
She hesitated.
It's tumpty-tumpty-day.
Tom John felt the chill engulf him. The others, too, jolted into life. Up from out of the depths of their blank minds, new words rushed. Words red with blood and revenge. Words that had echoed among the castle stones. Words stored in silicone. Words that would have themselves heard. Words that gripped their mouth so tightly that an attempt not to say them would result in a broken jaw.
Do you fear him now?
Said Gumridge.
And he so mazed with drink? Take his dagger, husband. You are a blade's width from the kingdom.
I dare not,
Wimslow said, trying to look in astonishment at his own lips.
Who will know?
Gumridge waved a hand towards the audience. He'd never act so well again.
See, there's only Eyeless Knight. Take the dagger now. Take the kingdom tomorrow. Have a stab at it, man!
Wimslow's hand shook.
I have it, wife,
he said.
Is this a dagger I see before me?
Of course it's a bloody dagger. Come on, do it now. The weak deserve no mercy. We'll say he fell down the stairs.
But people will suspect.
Are there no dungeons? Are there no pillywinks? Possession is 9 parts of the lore, husband. When what you possess is a knife.
Winslow drew his arm back.
I cannot. He has been kindness itself to me.
And you can be death itself to him.
Daffy could hear the voices a long way off. He adjusted his mask, checked the deathliness of his appearance in the mirror, and peered at the script in the empty backstage gloom.
Cower no, brief mortals, he said. I am death. Gainst who? Gainst who?
Whom?
Oh, thanks, said the boy distractedly. Gainst whom no lock may hold, will hold, nor fastened portal bar. Here, to...
Here to take my tally on this night of kings.
Duffy sagged.
Oh, you're so much better at it, he moaned. You've got the right voice, and you can remember the words.
He turned around.
It's only 3 lines, and how will...
Have my guts... He froze. His eyes widened and became 2 saucers of fear as death snapped his fingers in front of the boy's rigid face.
Forget,
he commanded, and turned and stalked silently towards the wings. His eyeless skull took in the line of costumes, the waxy debris of the makeup table. His empty nostrils snuffed up the mixed smells of mothballs, grease, and sweat. There was something here, he thought, that nearly belonged to the gods. Humans had built a world inside the world, which reflected it in pretty much the same way as a drop of water reflects the landscape, and yet... Inside this little world, they had taken pains to put all the things you might think they would want to escape from. Hatred, fear, tyranny, and so forth. Death was intrigued. They thought they wanted to be taken out of themselves, and every art humans dreamt up took them further in. He was fascinated. He was here for a very particular and precise purpose. There was a soul to be claimed. There was no time for inconsequentialities. But what was time, after all? His feet did an involuntary little clicking dance across the stones, alone in the grey shadows. Death tap-danced.
The next night in your dressing room they hang a star.
He pulled himself together, adjusted his scythe, and waited silently for his cue. He'd never missed one yet. He was going to get out there and slay them.
And you can be death itself to him. Now!
Death entered, his feet clicking across the stage.
Cower now, brief mortals, for I am Death, gainst whom no, gainst whom...
He hesitated for the very first time in the eternity of his existence. For although the death of the Discworld was used to dealing with people by the million, at the same time, every death was intimate and personal. Death was seldom seen except by those of an occult persuasion and his clients themselves. The reason that no one else saw him was that the human brain is clever enough to edit sights too horrible for it to cope with. But the problem here was that several hundred people were, in fact, expecting to see Death at this point, and were therefore seeing him. Death turned slowly and stared back at the hundreds of watching eyes. Even in the grip of the truth, Tom John recognized a fellow actor in distress and fought for mastery of his lips.
"Lock will hold,"
he whispered, through teeth fixed in a grimace. Death gave him a manic grin of stage fright.
"What?"
he whispered, in a voice like an anvil being hit with a small lead hammer.
"Lock will hold your fastened portal,"
said Tom John encouragingly.
"Lock will hold nor fastened portal.
Repeated Death, desperately watching his lips.
"Bar!
Bar!"
"No, I cannot do it," said Winslow. "I will be seen. Down there in the hall, someone watches." "There is no one. I feel the stare. Dithering idiot! Must I put in for you? See, his foot is upon the top stair."
Wimslow's face contorted with fear and uncertainty. He drew back his hand.
"No!"
The scream came from the audience. The Duke was half risen from his seat, his tortured knuckles in his mouth. As they watched, he lurched forward between the shocked people.
"No! I did not do it. It was not like that. You cannot say it was like that. You were not there!"
He stared at the upturned faces around him and sagged.
"Nor was I,"
he giggled.
"I was asleep at the time, you know. I remember it quite well. There was blood on the counterpane. There was blood on the floor. I could not wash off the blood. But these are not proper subjects for the inquiry. I cannot allow the discussion of national security. It was just a dream. And when I awoke, he'd be alive tomorrow. And tomorrow, it wouldn't have happened because it was not done. And tomorrow you can say, I did not know. And tomorrow you can say, I had no recollection. What a noise he made in falling, enough to wake the dead. Who'd have thought he had so much blood in him?"
By now, he had climbed onto the stage and grinned brightly at the assembled company.
"I hope that sorts it all out,"
he said. In the silence that followed, Tom John opened his mouth to utter something suitable, something soothing, and found that there was nothing he could say. But another personality stepped into him, took over his lips, and spoke thusly.
"With my own bloody dagger, you bastard! I know it was you. I saw you at the top of the stairs, sucking your thumb. I'd kill you now, except for the thought of having to spend eternity listening to your whining. I, Verence, formerly king of—"
"What testimony is this?"
said the Duchess. She stood in front of the stage, with half a dozen soldiers beside her.
"These are just slanders,"
she added.
"And treason to boot, the rantings of mad players."
"I was bloody king of Lancre," shouted Tom John.
"In which case you are the alleged victim,"
said the Duchess calmly,
"and unable to speak for the prosecution. It is against all precedent."
Tom John's body turned towards Death.
"You were there. You saw it all."
"I suspect I would not be considered an appropriate witness."
"Therefore, there is no proof, and where there is no proof, there is no crime,"
said the Duchess. She motioned the soldiers forward.
"So much for your experiment,"
she said to her husband.
"I think my way is better."
She looked around the stage and found the witches.
"Arrest them,"
she said. "No," said the fool, stepping out of the wings.
"What did you say?"
"I saw it all," said the fool simply. "I was in the great hall that night. You killed the king, my lord."
"I did not," screamed the Duke. "You are not there. I did not see you there. I order you not to be there."
"You did not dare say this before," said Lady Philmont.
"Yes, lady, but I must say it now,"
The Duke focused unsteadily on him.
"You swore loyalty unto death, my fool,"
he hissed. "Yes, my lord, I'm sorry."
"You're dead!"
The Duke snatched a dagger from Winslow's unresisting hand, darted forward, and plunged it to the hilt into the fool's heart. McGrath screamed. The fool rocked back and forth unsteadily.
"Thank goodness that's over,"
he said, as McGrath pushed her way through the actors and clasped him to what could charitably be called her bosom. It struck the fool that he had never looked at a bosom squarely in the face, at least since he was a baby, and it was particularly cruel of the world to save the experience until after he was dead. He gently moved one of McGrath's arms and pulled the despicable horned cowl from his head and tossed it as far as possible. He didn't have to be a fool any more, or, he realized, bother about vows or anything. What with bosoms as well, death seemed to be an improvement.